Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hello. Big one.
300 episodes.
That's not, you're lying. There's no way.
Yeah. It's true.
Maybe 70. I feel like 300. 300 is a lot. Like, there's no way. That's a lot of episodes. I mean, that's.
Yeah.
Man. Where's our life going? What am I doing?
Wow.
No offense, but God.
You're enjoying your life by talking about NBA history.
I love it. I'm kidding.
It's a lot of fun, obviously. So we decided, hey, what are we going to do for 300 episodes? It's a lot of episodes. It's, you know, pretty key milestone. We did something special for, you know, episode 100, episode 200, episode 300. What are we going to do?
We're reviewing the movie 300.
The movie 300, yeah, which is.
That's what I prepared. So hopefully that's what we're doing.
Weird. Okay. Yeah. Well, actually, what we decided to do, we're just going to talk about some guys.
I watched
300 for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah, all right.
Other than to just enjoy yourself.
And, just to enjoy Gerard Butler and all of his
glory. Enjoy a spectacle of violence, you know.
Cool. Yeah, let's do some guys. Yeah, whatever the other thing you said was. Yeah, we'll do that.
Some guys. All right, so yes, we decided, hey, let's talk about some guys who did stuff that was involved with the number 300. So,
like Gerard Butler. I see. Okay, so we're going to go over the people that were in 300. Got it. Okay. I'm going with the bit. Yeah. The 300 bit is done. All right, continue.
The entire cast. Yes, entire cast of 300. So, so some milestones, some accomplishments, some, you know, foibles, anything that involves the number 300, we're going to talk about it. And, well, hopefully it'll be a good episode. If it sucks, well, you know, you had 299 others.
Yeah, 299 were all pretty damn good. So, you know.
Yeah, so listen to one of those and forget it. So, yes, so first. Players exactly 300 games played in their career. So just a very small handful of guys who have accomplished this fate, in the NBA and the ABA. First of all, Dan Dickow. He's a point guard. He played for six teams between the years 2003 and 2008. Averaged 5.8 points per game, 2.6 assists per game. Not really known for much in his playing career, but he was involved in a couple of notable trades, including the 2004 Rasheed Wallace trade between the Blazers and the Hawks, in which he played one game for the Hawks, and the 2007 Blazers-Knicks swap that included Zach Randolph and Steve Francis. Ending the Steve Francis era, beginning the Zach Randolph era, both were quite illustrious eras, obviously.
So, oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. The Dan Dickow era was not quite as beautiful, but yeah, what can you do? So he's now a broadcaster for various outlets, including ESPN, primarily in the Northwest. He does a lot of Gonzaga stuff, according to Google searches. Now, is he really like hot takey, or am I mixing him with somebody
else? I'm trying to remember if he is. I don't watch a whole lot of that stuff anymore, so I don't remember. I want to say no, but I could be wrong. I'm sorry if he is a hot takey, but I don't recall him being hot takey. I do remember him, you know, obviously in the early years of Gonzaga, like one of the first few like bona fide like good Gonzaga players, like a guy that was putting that and now it's like second nature. They're always like in the number one. They're always like a tournament favorite. They're always doing this stuff. I don't think haven't won a national title yet. They've gotten very, very, very close many times.
Sure.
But he was, to me, one of the really original early, like, hey, this guy is good. And on Gonzaga, what is Gonzaga? Right. Like, what is this?
Gonzaga, what is that? Gonzaga?
Where is this? What is this? What is, right. And then, like, that was, you know, 20 years ago, and they've been pretty much solid as hell ever since.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's at least what I remember most about Dan Dickow's career. But I do not know if he's hot takey, probably, unless you're mixing him up with Kendrick Perkins, which happens to a lot of people. So Dan Dickow, not Kendrick Perkins. If you see that, if you see a guy and you go, whoa, who's that? Is that Dan Dickow? No, it's Perkins, probably Kendrick Perkins.
Probably Kendrick Perkins. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, that's a game.
They very often. I mean, yeah, it's right. They're pretty indistinguishable. Once you get the TV makeup on and stuff, it's hard to tell the difference between the two.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, perhaps there is a former NBA player or somebody in the NBA journalism sphere who has a similar name to Dan Dickow who is giving all these hot takes. Because, yeah, I did a search and I was like, oh, yeah, is Dan Dickow the guy? It's like he spews like Rick.
Or are you thinking of Dakic?
Yes.
Dan Dakic, I think, is who you're thinking of. Yes. Yes. There you go.
Okay. Different guy. Not an NBA player, right? Yeah.
I don't know what Dan Dakic's career. I know at one point I want to say he was the University of Indiana coach at a point. I might be wrong about that. I don't remember, but yeah, I think that's who you might be thinking of.
Dan Deck, I think you are correct. Yes, so Indiana was a Bowling Green coach. Did not play in the NBA, apparently. So, okay. All right. Dan Dickow.
Yeah, sorry to Dan Dickow, or maybe not. We don't really know. It might.
Okay.
It's very possible that both of them are hot take artists, but I don't. I think Dan Dickow stays on the straight and narrow, but cannot confirm that.
Yeah. No. I'm gonna go ahead and assume, unless we have any evidence to the contrary, because obviously we are an innocent until proven guilty podcast.
Correct. Correct.
So we are going to go ahead and assume that Dan Dickow is innocent of any hot tax. I've had a couple of drinks before this show. You know, celebrating three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
A few of the words are going to be a little bit different, but you know, it's all good. So, yes. So now we've got Bill Garnett, not Kevin Garnett. Bill, often confused, obviously.
Again. You know. Yeah. Bill Garnett. Yeah.
Bill Garnett. Power forward center, played for the Mavs and the Pacers between 1983 and 1986, averaged 5.5 points per game, 4.3 rebounds per game. We're going to need to get Reynes' verdict on this matter, but I suspect that we are officially going to be able to call him a big white stiff.
Yeah, 6'9", didn't really do anything, played a couple years. Yeah, right. Probably. I think it's probably a fair assessment, having not seen any video. I didn't study my Bill Garnett tapes before the show, but I think that's pretty fair. But I hate to do it before Reynes can rule on it. So maybe he can, when he listens to this, he can let us know. We can get the official word.
But, we will definitely, we'll reach out to Reynes, make sure they get the official word, because I do think that the audience really wants to know if Bill Garnett can officially be known as a big white star.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Wendell Ladner. Small forward, averaging 11.6 points per game, 8.3 rebounds per game, played for four ABA teams, mostly played for the Memphis Pros and Tams. Actually, was a two-time ABA All-Star, member of the 1974 Nets championship team, served as an enforcer for Julius Erving, best known probably for his Nets stint. Also, one of the true all-time great characters of the ABA, known for getting into a lot of fights, being a ladies' man, and if you Google Wendell Ladner, the Burt Reynolds-like promotional poster of him posing with nothing but an ABA ball.
Yeah, so. I think he has a very, if I remember correctly, he has a very small pair of shorts on as well. I don't believe he's fully, but it was recreated as well in Semi-Pro. If you remember in Semi-Pro in the Will Ferrell movie. He is not wearing anything else. Will Ferrell is just wearing the ball. But if you see that and remember that scene is a reference to Wendell Ladner's very, very strange photo. And, like, I guess he was a ladies' man. Like, I'm not one to judge. Like, he doesn't look that attractive. Like, I don't know. But, in 1974, I guess maybe it worked for some people. But, is not. I would not classify him as a sexy man. But
I do think that he was known for pursuing the ladies, perhaps.
Okay. I mean, he plays professional ball. I got a mustache. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's.
Yeah.
You know,
hey, why not?
That's halfway there in the 70s,
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So yes, unfortunately, Ladner, he died at the age of 26 in a 1975 crash, Eastern Airlines Flight 66. He actually was identified because he had his Nets championship ring on during that time. Yeah. So obviously, sad tragedy in the ABA and in basketball history. His number was sort of semi-retired for a long time by the Nets. They did not have anyone use the number four for a very long time outside of, I think Rick Mahorn used it, but for a very long time, they did not use that number. It appears that they've kind of brought it back in circulation. He's not among the banners that have been retired, but, I think the trainer of the team, was did not issue anyone else that number for a very long time in memory of Wendell Ladner. So definitely, I know Julius Erving said a lot of great things about him. He mentions him, of course, talks about the stories about him in his book and how, he was definitely important to the chemistry of that team and, that 74 championship. So, definitely a notable guy.
Yeah.
Now we've got Ray Lump.
Yep.
Point guard, shooting guard, known best for his playmaking. Born in Brooklyn, grew up in Queens, New York City boy. After serving in World War II, played college basketball for NYU, and he was on the team that made the finals of the 1940 NIT tournament along with Dolph Schayes. Actually competed in the 1948 Summer Olympics, part of the men's basketball team that won the gold medal. He played for the Indianapolis Jets in their only season, 1949. Was traded to the Knicks. He averaged 12.7 points per game his rookie year, which doesn't sound like all that much. He was actually 15th in the league at the time. So, a pretty notable number in terms of that. So he benefited somewhat by being with the Knicks because the Knicks were actually really good. They made three straight finals. Mm-hmm. But he didn't get a lot of minutes behind Dick McGuire, Max Eslovsky, Ernie Vandewey. He did appear in the finals in 51 with the Knicks. They nearly overcame the 3-0 deficit that year before losing Game 7. And also in 52, was traded to the Baltimore Bullets in the 53 season and the end of his career after that season, age 29. And then following his basketball career, he was the director of the New York Athletic Club almost 50 years. The NYAC was very influential in Olympic track and field, particularly in the 50s and 60s. And then during that time, there was a huge controversy regarding the athletic club during the 60s. Jackie Robinson and others urged a boycott of some of the events that they were sponsoring, including a Madison Square Garden, accusing the club of racial and religious discrimination and admitting new members. Later on, he would attend the 2012 Olympics at the invitation of Mike Krzyzewski. Said he hoped Lump's achievements in life after the Olympics could set an example for his players. His quote to the Associated Press, "I do think it will help our players understand that at some point in their lives, they will be Ray Lump." So, there
you go. I can't tell if that's nice or demeaning or
seems nice. Yeah.
I can't tell. It's Coach K. So there's probably a little tinge of, but I can't tell if it's, I guess it's nice, but I don't know. It's also
we're all going to be Ray Lump.
You're all going to be old as hell. There's a way to interpret it that it's he's being really mean. He's hey, here's this old guy. This is all going to be you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So go out there and work hard for me or something. It's what?
I think the idea is your playing career is going to end. You're going to make something your life, and here's what Ray Lump did.
So, yeah. And also, this guy was in the Olympics, 60 years ago or whatever. So just to keep in mind.
And of course that 48 team did really make a mark. That was the team that had all those, Kentucky players that eventually became the Indianapolis Olympians. And then, so they were, certainly a big deal for the time. That was one of the first, basketball teams that really made any kind of mark, in terms of, beyond just the sporting world of basketball, actually had any national notoriety. So there was a big deal at the time for sure. All right, we got Stanley Roberts. He was a center. He played for five teams between 1992 and 2000, mostly for the Clippers, averaged 8.5 points per game and 5.2 rebounds per game. So, all right, little caveat here. So his Wikipedia page says he was said to have the potential to be the best center of all time, which somewhat skeptical about that.
I remember Stanley Roberts, and yeah, there was a lot of promise for Stanley Roberts, but We may have jumped the gun a little bit with the, right. you know, this guy has everything that it needs, to, you know, to be the greatest center of all. That,
right. I mean, like, I have the potential to be
Yes,
the
best we all do
all
in
time.
Us. Right.
Yeah. Right. All of us, yeah. You know.
Right. If I just learn how to make every single, you know, shot I take, sure.
If I can rebound effectively at 5'10", yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I that seems a little, I mean, he was, I mean, I do remember there was a lot of hype for him going in. I mean, sure. He had a huge body. It was right. It was during the, like, you know, the Shaq time or whatever. It was during the time when it was like, all right, cool. Like, you know, there's, you know, Shaq's huge and he's dominating the NBA. This guy's even bigger. So it's like, you know, it's going to work. But like where Shaq kind of was able to make the most of being 7 foot and 300 pounds, Stanley Roberts, unfortunately, in some ways made the worst of being that, and his weight got a little out of control, and he's still carved out a really long, really good NBA career on that promise, but it certainly did not live up to the best center of all time potential that some might have said he had. So.
Right, yeah, and because he actually played with Shaq and apparently, like, you know, dominated against him at LSU, which, you know, of course invited comparisons between the two, but yeah. He dealt with injuries, drugs, you know, conditioning issues that limited him. And there's an article from 2002 from Sports Illustrated, you know, kind of looking at, you know, what could have been for him and looking at Shaq. And then a quote from that, he tells you himself, his teammates on the Orlando Magic called him big garbage.
Yikes.
Yeah. Ooh. Yes.
Tough nickname. So,
That's too bad, for Stanley Roberts. Yeah, big garbage not mentioned among his basketball reference nicknames though. So it's probably for the best.
That's fair. That's nice. So yeah, so leave that one out.
All right. The last we have Billy Thompson. We've talked about Billy Thompson before. Small forward, played from 1987 to 1992. Played for the Lakers and the Heat and the Warriors. Only 1 minute and one game for the Warriors. He won two rings with the Lakers, although his only playoff action was in the 1987 first round. He was actually a huge star in high school and in college, played for the University of Louisville. They got really far in the tournament, but never really translated to the NBA. Averaged 8.6 points per game, 5.4 rebounds per game. Was end up being selected by the Heat in the 88 expansion draft after the Lakers sent the Heat a second round pick not to select Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
We talked about that because if you don't remember that story, I forget the episode, probably the one about expansion teams would have been the one we did it. But the Lakers left Kareem Abdul-Jabbar unprotected because they had too many other guys they wanted to protect, and then kind of had to tell other teams, hey, don't. Can you please not take Kareem? And I mean, if I was an expansion team, I absolutely would have. I mean, Kareem probably would have said, no, I'm not going to play for the Miami Heat or whatever. But in the off chance he did, like, hell yeah, you're going to sell a bunch of tickets. You're going to be pretty good. Like, there's a lot of really good stuff that could happen from that. So the Lakers decided to kind of soften them, tell everybody, hey, please don't sign Kareem and we'll give you something in return in case a 1992 second round pick. I would have said, screw your second round pick. I'm taking Kareem.
Right. I'll take Kareem. Yeah.
That's your fault for not protecting him. You figure it out. Yeah. Then we'll trade him back to you for real players if you want.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but the Heat are doing a solid. The Heat just started. What are you doing a solid for the Lakers for?
It's interesting because the Heat actually, they made three or four of those trades in that expansion draft and got, you know, they got future picks and everything.
Yeah.
You know, for those guys where the Hornets didn't do nothing. Like, what are you thinking, Hornets? Like, what are you, why are the Heat getting all this stuff and why are the Hornets getting nothing? But I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that we did. Yeah, if you go back to that episode, and I forget what number, so I'm not going to tell you what wrong, but go find it. It's about expansion teams or whatever. There was a lot of good players that were left unprotected in that expansion draft. And like you're saying, the Heat, you know, were like, hey, we're going to take this guy. And then those teams like, whoa, please don't.
It's like, don't say Dennis Johnson.
DJ.
Trade. Yeah, there are a couple other guys. You know,
so smart on the Heat and very not smart on Charlotte, like you're saying, who were just we'll take take Kelly Trepuka. It's like, okay.
Right,
you can just take Kareem and see what will happen, you know?
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, they got Muggsy Bogues. I mean,
They did okay.
Yeah. All right, so Billy Thompson, one other fact about Billy Thompson, because this show obviously
needs Billy Thompson. Billy Thompson fact,
the BT Express, obviously.
It's a great nickname, by the way.
Yeah, right? He is one of only four players to have won a NCAA championship and an NBA championship back-to-back seasons, the other three being Bill Russell, Henry Bibby, and Magic Johnson.
There you go.
Yeah, nice.
Three of the greatest players of all time.
Right. Yes.
Bill Russell.
Well, two of the greatest.
I think you're really undermining Henry Bibby's contributions. Really?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Billy Thompson. Yeah. But Henry Bibby.
Henry Bibby. Absolutely.
All right, players with exactly 300 minutes played in their career. It's never happened. Nobody ever had it. No, it's 299. No. Steve Bardo and Cameron Reynolds are the only two to do that. Steve Bardo, actually a relatively interesting journey for him. He's a bit of a local star in my area because he played with the Flying Illini, University of Illinois basketball team that featured, great team by the way, Nick Anderson, Kendall Gill, Kenny Battle, and Marcus Liberty all on the same team. All four of those guys. Wow. Did get NBA minutes. Obviously, Nick Anderson and Kendall Gill became veterans of the NBA. And even at the time, people would probably tell you that in college, like Kenny Battle and Marcus Liberty were as good, if not better, than those guys. It obviously just didn't quite work out. Stephen Bardo, though, he played one game, 1 minute for the 1992 San Antonio Spurs. It was a 10-point victory over the Timberwolves in February. He got one rebound, though, so it wasn't a Tony Snell game for him.
Yeah,
he did play 23 games in 1993, but he probably wishes he didn't, as it was 23 games for the 11-71 worst of all time Dallas Mavericks, which we have done in a full episode about how ridiculous that team was and how terrible that team was. So then he said, screw this, I'm going to Spain. And he decided to go to Spain. He did 9 games with the 1996 Detroit Pistons. And then after his playing career was over 10 years, he got a 10-year playing career professionally, spent time in France, Italy, Japan, Spain, Venezuela, and also played for 3 different CBA teams, which I would love to one of these days kind of dig into the CBA, but it's so hard to find, enough stuff on the CBA. But we also have some people with 303 minutes played of all time. It's Stefani Lasame, I believe is how it's probably not how you pronounce it at all. I'm just going to move on.
Yeah.
Sean Singletary and Somalia Samake. And if you don't remember Somalia and Samake, he has a distinction of being only the third player ever to be suspended for steroids. Matt Geiger and Don McLean are the only guys to be suspended for steroids. I do not remember that about Matt Geiger, but Smocky did not. It didn't ruin his career, though. He played professionally until 2019 when he was 41 years old. So the NBA didn't really quite work out for him. Only 303 total minutes. But, man, he played until 2019 in various leagues around the world. So good for him.
Yeah. So I have a question for you, Rich.
Yes.
So, as you mentioned, Steve Bardo played 23 games for the 1993 Dallas Mavericks. How many games do you think that the Dallas Mavericks won in the games that Steve Bardo played?
Oh, man. Well, there weren't a whole lot of wins to go by.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the way that you're leading me into this question, it's a zero.
It's one, actually.
Oh.
So, they did win one. He played 1 minute in an 8-point victory November 14th, 1992, against the Atlanta Hawks, my Atlanta Hawks. So, he did play, and we've talked about this game before, but in the 58-point loss to the Sacramento Kings in December 29th, 1992, he played 16 minutes in that game, which was the most he played in any of these games. Although he was 2-for-4 from the field, he had 5 points, 4 turnovers though. So probably that bright.
I feel like we can't blame him, but I mean, we can't,
we can't say like, oh, it wasn't his fault.
Right.
It was part of the problem.
He wasn't helping. He didn't help.
Yeah, he was not helping. Yeah.
Maybe he didn't hurt, but he certainly didn't help is probably the best way to,
that's sad.
Yeah. Steve Bardo. He also does commentary now. He does not do hot takes. He doesn't do hot takes.
All right. Well, there you go. Good to know.
Oh, God. Sorry. I just hit my mic really hard. Anyway, players with exactly 300 minutes played in a season. Quincy Doobie, Kevin Ali, and Jeff Webb. As much as I would love, I tried so hard to get Quincy Doobie fun facts, but there's not that many Quincy Doobie fun facts. So you're going to get Kevin Ali fun facts. Yeah. How about that? Kevin Ali, as a member of the 2008 Philadelphia 76ers, notched exactly 300 minutes played in a season. He came close to doing that in the 2000 season as well. He ended at 290 minutes played. So a fun fact about Ali, he is one of 68 NBA players to have played over 600 games in the league and start less than or equal to 100 games. And the reason I put the equal to is he's the 100 games guy. So he played over 600 games in his career, exactly 100 games started. Del Curry has 1,083 games played with only 99 starts. So anyway, Ali was able to get those many games going without you know, that's a distinction of in himself, because playing over 600 games in your career is pretty damn cool. And he did that, and he had quite a journey in his early NBA career. So he starts all the way in October of 1995. He signs as a free agent for the Golden State Warriors. A couple days later, he's waived by the Warriors. Okay, 2 years away from the league, does a bunch of stuff, does other leagues, does CBA, all that sort of stuff. October, the Dallas Mavericks bring him in. October 1997, he goes, all right, cool. December of 1997, he's waived by the Mavericks. Okay, that's it for 1997. March 1998, he signs the first of two 10-day contracts with the Orlando Magic. March 22nd, 1998, he signs a contract for the rest of the year with the Orlando Magic, so good for him. January 21st, obviously, the lockout happens. He has to sign a little bit late. He signs as a free agent with the Sacramento Kings. By February, he is waived by the Sacramento Kings. In March, the Orlando Magic say, hey, Kevin Ollie, that was good. You want to come back again? And he goes, yeah, sure, I'd love to come back. They sign him to a 10-day contract. March 14th, a couple days later, he is waived yet again. October 1999, he is signed once again by the Dallas Mavericks. And then later that month, he's waived by the Dallas Mavericks again. And then finally, November 24th, 1999, he signs as a free agent with the Philadelphia 76ers. Oh, but no, that's not it. Yeah, it's October 3rd, 2000. He is then signed as a free agent by the New Jersey Nets. The Philadelphia thing doesn't last. December 15th of that year, he's waived by the New Jersey Nets again. December 22nd, he signed as a free agent by the 76ers and sticks with them for the entire year. September of 2001, he signed as a free agent for the Chicago Bulls. And from that point forward, he pretty much had a steady NBA career all the way until 2009. So, you know, a great example of sticking with it.
Yeah.
Involved in two huge trades, too. We talked about somebody, you know, people involved in trades. He was... when the Bulls traded Ron Mercer and Ron Artest and Brad Miller to get Jalen Rose and a bunch of other bad players, he was in that trade. He was also in the Ray Allen, Gary Payton trade as well for the Milwaukee Bucks and the Seattle Supersonics. So there you go. And the Kendrick Brown for Eric Snow trade from July of 2004 that we all remember.
We remember that very well.
The Kendrick Brown trade, as it's known in most circles. So.
It is well-known in many circles.
Every July 20th, you remember, you go, God, is today the... Yes, today is
the Kendrick Brown trade.
Sorry, did I say Kendrick? Kedrick.
You did. You said Kendrick, but
Kedrick.
Kedrick, yes. So, yeah, that Chicago Bulls Pacers trade, that's an underrated trade. I mean, trading, you know, Artest and Brad Miller for, you know, junk and Jalen Rose toward the end of his career. Yeah, that's a, it's not a.
I was mad about it at the time. And it's like, those guys weren't even that good then, but I was like, no, these guys are too good to be trading them away. And then when the Pacers were good, like immediately after, and like half the team was just ex Bulls, I was like, come on, what the hell? Like, I knew it at the time. Like, what are we doing? Come on.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. Yeah.
It happened. Anyway, players with exactly 300 points scored in their entire career.
Ooh, I want to know.
Ron Baker, Marcelo Huertas.
Ron Baker, he's cooking.
Ron Baker, white guy, big hair. You remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Maybe, sort of, but if you
don't. I remember the hair.
He scored exactly 300 points in his entire three-year NBA career. Two full seasons with the Knicks, 11 games with the Knicks in 2019. Then he was sent away to Washington for four games, and that was the end. Yeah. Ron Baker's NBA career. He scored all 300 of those points with the New York Knicks, because despite playing in four games and 45 minutes of the Wizards, he never scored. His career high, 13 points scored December 15, 2016 against the Golden State Warriors.
That's sad for the Wizards, I guess, you know. Yeah, you would think, 44 minutes, you maybe can get a point, you know.
Something.
Like, yeah, he had one three-point attempt during that time. He had no two-point attempts apparently during that time.
Yeah, he was just there to, do whatever they wanted him, do whatever the team wanted, you know.
He got a defensive rebound, and he got two assists during that, in those four games.
That seems like not a lot of stuff going on in 45 minutes. It feels like he should have had something more going on, but.
Yeah, maybe he should have focused more on his game than his hair, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
there you go. Prima donna. All right. So now, players with exactly 300 points in a season. 28 times this has occurred in ABA history as well. Mike Barr did it twice. We're going to talk a little bit more about Mike Barr. Only a little bit, because there's not that much about Mike Barr, unfortunately. But other luminaries, first of all, Bill Wennington. You have some things to say about Bill Wennington.
I do have something to say about Bill Wennington, because it allows me to talk about the beef Wennington. And Jason, know nothing about the beef Wennington. People listening to this know nothing about the beef Wennington, but our Chicago area listeners that grew up in the 90s will know about the beef Wennington, a very special Chicago area McDonald's exclusive beef Weddington burger that came out. It had a single beef patty, cheese, onions, barbecue sauce, and a slice of Canadian bacon for
that sounds like a delight. Yeah,
Bill Weddington's heritage. I loved it. I remember because I liked Bill Weddington as a kid, because who couldn't like Bill Weddington?
You and Randis.
Yeah, well, it was ironic, but also like, he's a good role player. Like,
sure, that's fine. Yeah, he was all right.
And then he had this, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna try this thing. It sounds great, and it was awesome. And I, you know, you can make it at home if you'd like. If you want to celebrate, 300 episodes of Over and Back. Yeah, you make a hamburger and you throw a slice of Canadian bacon on there. You can.
Yeah,
pretty much do it. Some barbecue sauce is key, but yeah, that is the beef Weddington. So,
wow, that sounds wonderful. Yeah, I will. Well, thank you for sharing. I do deeply appreciate that.
And you can look up Beef Weddington on YouTube, and Adam Ryan, who I believe is friend of the show, listens to the show sometimes.
Yeah. In awareness, In awareness podcast, great. He's been on the show. Yep.
Uploaded a WGN news broadcast where Weddington talks about the beef with Weddington, and he just like goes on way too long about the story of Judd Bushler's pregnant wife, craving one of them. It goes way too long. The story is so long.
It's a little uncomfortable.
It's
yeah.
so weird, but yes, the beef. Weddington. This is one of my only opportunities to talk about the beef Weddington. So you may carry on if you'd like.
We already did all of our, our all Jordan episodes. You know, we did,
it did not play a big role in the last dance. We didn't have a ton of time to talk about Bill Weddington during our last dance series.
So. But now we have the opportunity. So 300 points in a season for Bill Weddington. Did it for the Mavericks, by the way, not for the Bulls, but it still works. So I'm sure Dallas loves him too. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we got Kenny Smith. Kenny Smith, of course.
Kenny the Jet,
Dana Barros, 50-point game, 300 points this season. Not the same season, I would assume.
Yeah, that would be a rough season where he scored 50 and then it's like, yeah, that's all. I had one good game, guys. Like, I'm not that good.
That would be strange, yeah. No, like, yeah. Dan Majerle in his second stint with the Suns in the early 2000s. We got Tim Thomas. We have more to come about Tim Thomas.
Oh, yes. Plenty of Tim Thomas.
Lots of Tim Thomas. You come to this podcast for Tim Thomas. Amari Stoudemire toward the end of his career with the Heat.
I'm not believing that happened. We have brought up Amari Stoudemire's Heat tenure like four or five times in the show's history. Sure. No, it's just not. It's
you don't believe it?
No, it never happened. It's wrong. Yeah. There's images, but those are all deep fakes. Like, I'm positive of it. There's no way. Amari Stoudemire in the Heat. Come on, Jason. Get out of here.
Yeah. You know who else was on this Heat team? Or who was not on this Heat team? We had Chris Bosh, who we'd expect. We had Gordon Dragic. Yeah, who we expect. Lowell Deng, he was on the Heat. Yeah. Joe Johnson was on the Heat team. Dwayne Wade, this was his second Heat? Or no, this was right before he left and then came back later.
Yeah.
It's not on Whiteside, who we'd expect. Justice Winslow, kind of there. Right? Tyler Johnson, some of the young guys. Gerald Green was on this team. So... Josh Richardson, they had a lot of guys.
They had a lot of players.
This is ultimately a talk about, the Josh Richardson, they had Mario Chalmers, they had Beno Udrix, they had Josh McRoberts, they had Haslam, of course. They had like 16 guys who I know.
Like, yeah, you could talk about, like, there's a good chance we could talk about something about every single one of these men on this team. That's incredible.
Until we get to Bryante Weber and Jarnell Stokes.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the guys who I can't really tell you much about.
I don't know
about,
much Bryante Weber thoughts.
I don't. Not off the top of my head. Yeah. So that's this is definitely a team with some guys. So perfect for the show.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And then Tyson Chandler for the Suns late on.
Not on that Heat team, I don't think, but no.
Tyson Chandler was not on the Heat team. No, different team. Around the same time, but different team. So, all right. So, Mike Barr. What do we know about Mike Barr? Well,
nothing. Tell me.
A little bit. I mean, we know, he was a 6'3 shooting guard. He played five seasons first in the ABA, then the NBA. 73-77, played for the Squires of Virginia for a couple of years, then the Spirits of St. Louis for a couple of years. And then went to the Kings of Kansas City in the merger season of 1978 in the NBA. He averaged 5.9 points per game his pro career. Did average 10.4 points per game on 57% shooting, 4.6 rebounds, 5.2 assists in the Spirits' huge upset of the defending champion Nets in 1975. So when he was called to deliver big, Mike Barr delivered.
Good for him.
1978, after his NBA career, and he played and he coached for the West Virginia Wheels.
All right.
And something called the All-American Basketball Alliance, but unfortunately, the wheels above the league and the wheels with him folded after much. So those wheels did not keep spinning.
Fell off. Yeah. Wheels yes. Fell off the...
They were based in Wheeling, of course, you know, the Wheeling wheels, obviously that makes a whole lot of sense now. So played at the Wheeling Civic Center. They were owned by a Philadelphia based attorney who apparently didn't have a whole lot of money. He was also the president of the league. So that's never a really good sign when one of your owners is also the president of the league. So, yes, the West Virginia Wheels final record was 3-8. So, unfortunately, whatever Mike Barr was doing, it was not enough.
Yeah, that's cool. I'd like to learn more about the All-American Basketball League. I'll put that in my notes to think. I love odd basketball leagues. They're always good.
There's a good Fun While Lasted article about the All-American Basketball
League. Oh, cool. Perfect. I'll check that out.
Yep.
All right, let's get to players with exactly 300 rebounds. We promised you were going to get more Tim Thomas, and you are going to get that. 33 players have exactly 300 rebounds in a season, and Tim Thomas is one of those. And I just want to say it's a goddamn tragedy that when you Google search Tim Thomas, some stupid hockey player shows up and not the Tim Thomas we all actually are trying to search for.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's and I think this ice hockey Tim Thomas is, you know... Uh-huh. A relatively big figure in the hockey world, but who cares? I mean, nobody has ever Googled hockey. Tim Thomas and wanting to hear or see that dork. No, they want Tim Thomas, NBA player Tim Thomas.
Tim Thomas, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He started in 1998 and would go until 2010, which is pretty amazing given like his reputation in the league of like, this guy's a knucklehead, but he was like too damn good. Like everybody was just like, hell, come on. Like, you couldn't deny him because, you know, it was like, Tim Thomas ever figures out he's going to be great. It's like, well, he's been signed for like a decade and a half. So, you know, must be doing something okay. But anyway, he played everywhere. He started in Philly. Yeah. He was a draft day trade for Keith Van Horn, then Milwaukee, then New York, then Chicago, then Phoenix, then the Clippers, then the Knicks again, then the Bulls again, and then finally ended his career as a Dallas Maverick. All right, you ready for some Tim Thomas fun facts?
I am ready for them.
First one is Notorious Tim. While on the Bucks, Thomas was known to wear a customized version of his own jersey that said Notorious Tim. That's when he would make public appearances at events. He would wear a jersey to the event, and it would say Notorious T-I-M on it, not Thomas. So there you go.
Right.
Him and Van Horn joined at the hip. So he, as we said, draft day trade for Keith Van Horn. Also on February 16, 2004, Thomas is traded to the New York Knicks in a three-team trade that included, Jason, your Atlanta Hawks. The trade sent Keith Van Horn from the Knicks to the Bucks, Nazi Muhammad from the Hawks to the Knicks, Joel Prisbilla, the Vanilla Gorilla, from the Bucks to the Hawks. Great, great land by the Hawks. Oh, and they decided, man, is there a way we could get another bad white guy? Sure. You could have Michael Doliak from the Knicks to the Hawks. So there you go. The Hawks think, man, what's the problem with our team? I got it. We need more tall white guys that aren't that good. So they got Joel Prisbilla and Michael Doliak in one trade. So good for them all at once. So,
It was a glorious time for the Atlanta Hawks.
Who can forget? And then, feud with Kenyon Martin. So Thomas was injured by a Jason Collins foul and ended up having a lengthy beef with Collins's then teammate Kenyon Martin over it. Thomas at one point challenged Martin to a boxing match with the proceeds going to charity, and Martin, an absolute coward, declined. So
coward. Wow. Yeah.
I'm just saying. I mean, Tim was like, hey, we'll do it for charity, man.
Let
me beat your ass for charity. And Kenyon said no. So I am declaring Kenyon Martin fake tough guy. There it is.
All right. He's a coward. That's over.
I mean, you could absolutely whoop my ass today, any day.
Well, yeah, no question. Yeah.
10 times over. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just saying.
I mean, we are both huge weaklings. Yeah. Yes. Who have no business calling anybody else a coward or anything like that. But
I am the biggest coward.
Nevertheless, we have a podcast. So
I got to be entertaining. Right. I got to, in this beef between Tim Thomas and Kenyon Martin, Kenyon was a coward. So that's
we have to do the Dan Dackage thing sometimes.
Right. Or slash Dan Dickow thing. Where,
Dan Dickow. Yes. Wonderful stuff. Yeah. I also just worth noting Notorious TIM, not a basketball reference official nickname.
Oh, that's BS. Yeah.
They probably need to get on that. Yeah. We need to, you know, get some pull there. See if we can have a conversation about that, because that doesn't feel, you know, it doesn't feel valid. I feel like that nickname should be there.
Yeah. I mean, with all the damn nicknames they have on that site, there's some things that you're like, I've never once heard you know, Dirk be called like Spider Baby or whatever. And you're like, why is that a nickname? I've never heard that ever. Yes. Notorious TIM, I mean, come on, it's right there. Like, you can find it. It's not that hard to find. Like, it wasn't a real deep fact that I had to find. I have to, you know, go through the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal, you know, archives to find it. It was, you know, it was right there.
Yeah,
so.
It was right there. Yeah. Excellent point, Rich. I appreciate it.
And that is the name of the Milwaukee paper, in case you're curious.
It is. You,
I'm not making that up. I know that.
No, I'm aware. Yes. I think, well, hopefully most of our listeners are aware of, you know, the Milwaukee media well enough to understand the news outlets that are, you know, I think most of our listeners have, you know, a pretty good understanding of, you know, the Milwaukee media scene. So yes, I understand that. Yeah. So, all right. Players, 300 assists in a season, exactly 300 assists. 16 players have accomplished this. Steven Jackson did it twice in Steven Jackson-ish fashion. Yes. So the most notable players to have done so, Dave Bing did it for the 78 Celtics, Sidney Moncrief, the 83 Bucks, Grant Hill, the 1999 Pistons, Blake Griffin, 2017 Clippers, and Kevin Durant for the 2017 Warriors. But back to Steven Jackson, who did it twice. Accomplished this in 2008 with the Warriors. This was the We Believe season, and in 2010 with the Warriors, and in which he was traded to some other team. And I'm not sure if I'm reading this right, but the Bobcats.
When was this? Are you mixing up the All American? That was an All American basketball team.
Okay, yeah,
All American Basketball Alliance. I think it's one of those teams. It's. The West Virginia Wheels, the Charlotte Bobcats, like it's ludicrous names like that. They needed to drum up support in the local area, so they came up with weird team names like that. So I think your notes got crossed. It was those drinks that you had before the show, obviously.
I mean, I'm surprised that the NBA recognizes their records, but
the All American Basketball Alliance records. Yeah, it's very strange, but
it's surprising. But hey, well, you know, whatever. So yes, Jackson, he played for 8 franchises the years 2001, 2014. Probably best known for his team with the Spurs and his time with the Spurs. He won a ring in 2003. The Pacers, where he was involved in the Malice at the Palace brawl in Detroit. And the Warriors, where he led the team to a huge upset of the number one seed Mavs in the first round and was famously heralded for how he defended the much taller Dirk Nowitzki during that series. Random aside, not related to Steven Jackson, but there were only 3 seasons between the 2008 upset of the Warriors over the Mavs and then the 2011 Mavs championship. And for some reason in my head, it feels like there is a much longer time span between those 2 events. Do you feel the same way?
It's really, it is strange. No, it definitely is. It's because even though I was I've been a huge Mavericks fan for years and years and years and followed them and watched as many games as I possibly could, it did feel like there was a totally different era, you know, between those. And it really, I mean, there really wasn't that much, but it did kind of have that feel to it. And it probably was, you know, the getting rid of Avery Johnson, going to the Rick Carlisle, a lot of the players moved on. Like, a lot of stuff happened in that time. So it does feel like a completely different era. But yeah, it does. I mean, they were in the, you know, the NBA Finals, like, you know, not that, you know, to the Heat, you know, losing to the Heat, not that, you know, but like the year before that upset. And like, that feels like it does not feel like the Mavericks were like always there and then like finally got over the hump in 2011. It felt like they kind of were a flash in the pan. They had the big upset. Then they did whatever. And then, oh my God, they broke through. But it's like, they were there the whole time. They were just like a solid, consistent team a lot of those years. But I mean,
Yeah, they felt them like a slight bit, but
right.
Good team, and you're right. They did have a pretty significant. The 2008 team and 2011 team were very different outside of Dirk, obviously, and a couple other guys, Jason Terry, obviously. But they did have a lot of turnover, so that kind of makes some sense.
And like so much happened in the NBA during that time too. I mean, it's just things got wild with the Heat and all that sort of stuff. So it was it felt like a wild, wild time. I mean, 2008 to 2011 does feel like, you know, 10 years when you take in all the stuff that was going on in the NBA at the time.
Sure. Anyway, so Steven Jackson averaged 15.1 points per game, 3.9 rebounds per game, 3.1 assists per game, 858 games. I was a little surprised he never like had any kind of, he was never an all-star. He never had any like defensive player, you know, team honors, anything like that. That kind of surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, he feels like he had a more significant career that like if you sent somebody to his basketball reference page, they would just kind of be like, this guy seemed okay, you know. But like, yeah, he was like a very important player, very notable player. Like, I think of a certain generation, there are fans that just know Steven Jackson and we're aware of like how important he was to a lot of really, really good, you know, winning teams. Yeah, it is surprising that he never did reach those, you know, never really, yeah, like the accolades never really sure. came for him.
He did receive a league MVP vote in 2010.
Okay, that's absurd. That's ridiculous.
I don't think
in 2010, who voted for him?
He was with the Charlotte team. He did not. I don't think it was a first place vote. But
come on, that's absurd. Whoever that was. While I just said that you know Captain Jack or whatever, Stack Jack, as I'm looking at Basketball Reference right now, I understand that. Like, yeah, he. You know, we said he shouldn't receive more accolades, but not that accolade.
Not MVP, no. Different accolade.
Did he really help the Charlotte team that much in 2010 that he was worthy of an MVP
vote?
Well,
hey, they made the playoffs for the first time, so. You know,
all right, fine. He scored 20 points. We'll let him. Yeah. We'll let him have it. We'll let him.
All right, we'll let him have it.
He doesn't have anything else. So.
All right, he and Jared Wallace. You know, they're doing some good work there. So. All right, players with exactly 300 steals in a season. Two players have done it. Well, the two players have had more than 300 steals. No one has ever exactly had 300. Don Busey and Alvin Robertson. So Don Busey had 346 steals in the 1976 final ABA season for the Pacers. Alvin Robertson did it in 1986 for the Spurs. 301. So no one's at exactly 300. Yeah, it's obviously a very rare accomplishment to go over 300. So that, yeah, it's almost you know, it's more than four steals per game. So certainly significant for them. Going with blocks, players with 300 blocks in a season. Well, no one has ever had exactly 300 in a season. Manute Bol is closest with 302. If we play by Price is Right rules, so you can't go over, then it's Akeem Olajuwon with 297. There have been 26 seasons of 300-plus blocks by 12 players. Mark Eaton has had six of them. And Bol, Olajuwon, and David Robinson each have had three seasons of more than 300 blocks. So relatively small number of players.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, it's players with exactly 300 turnovers in a season. These aren't all good. Some of these are bad, but hey, a few of these players are pretty damn good. You know, 300 turnovers means you got the ball in your hands a lot. That's not all, you know, you're going to get a lot of turnovers. The best players get a lot of turnovers. They have the ball in their hand a lot. So, happened four times in history. Magic Johnson, 1987. Right. Pretty good player. Not bad.
Yeah.
Moses Malone, 1980. Pretty good player. Not bad. Larry Keenan, 1979. Also very good player. Bill Melchione, 1971 ABA. You might be thinking, man, what the hell? He's got a retired number, so just wait until we get to Bill Melchione here.
Right.
I will say this, there is just not enough Melchionis in the league.
No.
We got Bellinellis, we got Ginobili's, but we don't have any Melchionis, so.
Yeah.
I think it
might be Melchione. Sure. All right, Melchione's fine with me, but I just
Melchione probably sounds a little bit better.
For any of the listeners here who are going to be like, no, it's actually Melchione, I just want to address it for them before we continue.
I apologize if I
no, you do not apologize, Richard. You have nothing to apologize for. I just want to make sure that, you know, the funny daddies among us understand that the alternate pronunciation is possible. So
Bill. Let's call him Bill now.
Bill.
Is one of only four players to have won both NBA and ABA championships. So good for him. He spent 2 years as a GM of the Nets after his career and is probably, I guess infamous would be the right word, for being forced to sell Julius Erving to the 76ers to fund the Nets fee for the ABA-NBA merger. We've talked about that in many episodes before that, you know, they said, hey, you want to come in the NBA? And they said, sure. And they said, all right, you need to pay us X. And they went, ooh, we don't have that, but hey, we have Julius Erving, so we'll sell him and get some money for that. So that's an unfortunate thing that had to happen, but hey, it gave us Julius Erving on the 76ers. So it ended up working out pretty well. The Nets retired his number. This one's a little tough, like a good career, but he's one of only six retired New Jersey Nets, joining Drazen Petrovic, Jason Kidd, John Williamson, Julius Erving, and Buck Williams. So I guess the Nets were kind of desperate to retire some numbers. I don't know if whatever. I don't care. Do I care? I don't care if they're retiring numbers. Retire them all.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
I don't care.
Let's do it right now. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's add all the numbers. Let's just have no numbers.
Well,
let's
the Celtics are getting pretty damn close now. So there's definitely a situation brewing in Boston where they are going to be very low on numbers moving forward here. But
fair enough. So I would say let the Nets be the Nets. You know, we'll see. Some teams are very stingy with the number of retirements, and some teams are very...
I don't know if there's any one team that kind of stays right in it. It just feels like, some teams are just like, whatever, retire everybody who kind of did anything, and then other teams are like, no.
Yeah.
We have to build
it. No.
Yeah.
You can be a Ring of Honor, like the Magic, if it retired anybody's number.
We do the Ring of Honor. Get out of here, Orlando.
Yeah, come on.
Put Shaq's number in the rafters. Shaq and Penny, get them up there. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Come on, Dwight Howard, throw them all up there. Anyway, players who shot exactly 30% from the field, or 0.300. That's probably a better way to do it, because it's 300.
Yeah. 300 after all, yes.
We're not using percentages here.
Yeah. All right.
47 times it has happened, and two players flirting with it this year. Alim Ford. So Alim Ford, you might know him as the former first overall pick of the Puerto Rican Basketball League. Yes.
Not, sure.
You're probably wondering, Puerto Rican Basketball League. He's actually Puerto Rican, though, so it's actually a pretty cool accomplishment for him. Currently on the Lakeland Magic of the G League. He was signed when the Magic were down to almost no players left on their roster in the midst of the COVID-19 breakout, the hardship exemption there. Probably not going to get any more playing time this year, but never say never. But right now he is flirting with it. And also Tyler Johnson. You mentioned Tyler Johnson a little bit earlier. Remember, Tyler Johnson was like good for a while. Like there was a couple years where he was actually like a pretty good player. Seems like a long time ago, and he's been a bit of a mess lately and kind of bouncing all over the place. He spent time in 2019 and 2020 with the Phoenix Suns, put at the Brooklyn Nets in 2020 and 2021. So these are all good teams that he's playing with at this time, but he's kind of not that big of a part of those good teams. He signed with the 76ers in December of 2021 due to the hardship exemption. Eventually got a 10-day with the Spurs, but has not played since. So Tyler Johnson, unless something dramatically changes for Tyler Johnson anytime soon, it looks like both Alim Ford and Tyler Johnson are going to join this illustrious list.
Illustrious list. And some other key members of this list, because we definitely want to go through this list. The largest number of minutes by far, 2,109 by Bill Calhoun of the 1955 Milwaukee Hawks. Now, little caveat here, the league average field goal percentage at that point was 385, which, I mean, still pretty significantly over 300, but is not like, you know, it's certainly not like shooting 300 a day. Outside of Bill Calhoun and Bob Schaefer, who had 578 minutes in the following season, 1956, no one has accomplished this, putting quotes around accomplished, in more than 200 minutes in the shot clock era. So it's a rare feat, as you know, as we said. And you know, only generally happens to people who have a very small number of minutes, because obviously it's a very low number to shoot. Most recent before the two from this season was Kostas Antetokounmpo, did it in 56 minutes for the Lakers in the 2021 season. Other notable members of the club, notable in terms of names. So Herm Foich. So obviously Herm Foich reminds me of your name.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if I'm related to Herm. I don't think so.
Right.
But Herman Joseph Foich.
Right. Nickname of Dutch.
Okay.
Back when they had nicknames, great nicknames, you know. Dutch, yeah. Also, not the same Dutch who, of course, is in the Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid.
Right. So, but yeah, I don't know. I saw that name and I was like, whoa, that's kind of cool. So, it's Foich.
Played 42 games for the Baltimore Bullets in the 40. He was on the championship team, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
So,
one and done. One that got that ring was like, peace, I'm out.
Yeah. All right. Yes. So, Dick Nostman.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I know. I apologize.
Would you call me?
I have to say it. Yeah. Dick Nostman played for the Syracuse Nationals in the 1954 season, played five games for the Nationals. Boris Nachamkin. Boris Alexander Nachamkin.
I saw a press conference of that guy this week. Yeah, he's one of the generals. He's one of the generals in the Russian army. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he died in 2018, so that seems tricky.
Well, maybe that's not him then. Maybe it was another guy named Boris Kind or whatever the hell you said. So.
Played six games for the Rochester Royals in 1955. He is one of two Borises in NBA history. So
not enough, you know, not enough Borises either.
We need a few more Borises.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's boring.
Maybe not right now, but soon.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Perhaps. Next, Mel Gibson.
Ah, fuck that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. No. Different Mel Gibson.
Oh. Well, this one's fine then. All right.
The Kedorva Comet. He played nine games for.
You don't get a nickname if you played nine games. This is what I'm talking about. Why does Mel Gibson get a nickname, but Notorious T.I.M. doesn't get one?
Well.
And why, when I Google Mel Gibson, does this stupid actor come up and not this guy?
Right. Obviously, you play nine games for the Lakers in 1964, average 1.4 points per game. You deserve to be ahead of the Cougars.
I can't believe.
Hey, listen, when you come from the illustrious Western Carolina University, you definitely should, you know, be high on that list. So when you're the Kedorva Comet, goddammit, you deserve some respect. Yeah.
Yeah. I earnestly typed in Mel Gibson and was like, like surprised, taken aback when that Mel Gibson showed up and not this Mel Gibson.
I was like, what the hell?
Actually upset about that for some reason.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway.
So let's see. And then finally, Mark Price. We've heard of Mark Price. Tell us about Mark Price.
Yeah. So we know Mark Price. This one's a bit of a surprise because you're like, why? Mark Price, he's a great shooter. What the hell? How do you do this? This one's a surprise, but it also has some caveats. This occurred in 1996 when Price, who was then a member of the Washington Bullets, his first non-Cavs year, he played in only seven games that season as well and was hurt and had some injuries and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, a little bit of a caveat there because Mark Price is like awesome and great and a good shooter. But in that particular year, shot 30%, 0.300 from the field. So,
yeah. So that was right at the end of his career.
Obviously. Yeah, yeah. So, and, like, right. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, the last few years of Mark Price's career were not great.
Right.
But yeah, leave the memories alone of what he was. Yeah. So.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. So,
all right.
So
players with exactly 300 fouls in a season, a shockingly long list, 25 to be exact, with 300 fouls in a season exactly. Most recently, Theo Ratliff in 2004. Did it. It was first accomplished by Arnie Risen in 1956, and that made me think, wow, Arnie Risen, he's a good player. What the hell? And then I looked and, like, there's a lot of great players on this list. Like, so the key to, like, having a Hall of Fame career is at some point get exactly 300 fouls in a season because, man, Jerry Lucas, Bailey Howell, Walt Bellamy, Bob Pettit, Tom Sanders, Tom Van Arsdale, Hal Greer, Jack Sikma, and Elvin Hayes all did it. Like, that's a really good list of players.
David McDaniel,
Yeah, yeah, and, like, those are just the guys that I was like, wow, these are, like, some of the best guys ever, like, Hall of Fame-level guys. Yeah, the other guys on the list are all really good, too. Zeev McDaniel's on there. Theo Ratliff, as we mentioned. Like, it is a illustrious list there.
Tom Van Arsdale and Jack Sikma both did it twice.
Yeah, yeah, those guys did it twice. Sikma did it in 1978 and 1989, so a nice little gap between that.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, too.
That's great. Yeah.
And Van Arsdale did it in 1960 and 1974. I mean, that is, like, to get exactly 300 two times in your career and have it be like 11 years apart, like Sikma did. I mean, that's nuts. Yeah. It's so weird and random, but there it is.
Yeah. I love it. Excellent. All right. Coaching milestones. So games coach, no one is reached 300 exactly. So Sidney Lowe closest 307. You know, of course, he was head coach for Vancouver and for Memphis early 2000s. Also coached a couple years for the Timberwolves in the early 90s. So been a while for him. No one else is really particularly close. However, Nick Nurse right now, he's at 294 games coached. Is obviously, unless something horrible happens, he's going to, exceed that by the end of the season. Going to pass that milestone. And likely will be coaching for, you know, if not for the Raptors, certainly in the NBA for a long time, given that he's, you know, won a championship and is fairly young. So, yes, games won. We have Brian Hill, 298. Jim O'Brien, 303. Brian Hill, 74 years old. Hey, maybe there's still time. You know, it's been 9 years since he's been in the league at all. He was last a Pistons assistant then. But, yeah, you never say never.
Yeah, I don't think the call's coming, but you know.
Oh, hey, you never know.
You just never know if that call's going
to
come.
Hey, maybe somebody who just wants to have, you know, early 90s Orlando Magic stories, you know?
right. Yeah, he wasn't like that good of a coach. I don't know why you would call Brian Hill, but you know, if you call Brian Hill, you call Brian Hill. You know?
Why not? You know, yeah. I mean, yeah, give it a shot, see what happens. So, yeah. I always get confused between, because there's two Jim O'Briens. There's one who was the NBA version of Jim O'Brien, and then there's the other Jim O'Brien who was like the Ohio State coach in the you know, the 2000s.
Oh right, yeah.
So, yes, because the other Jim O'Brien coached for the Celtics, the Sixers, and the Pacers. For he has not coached. He was an assistant coach again for the Sixers in 2018. So he's been a while since he's been in the league. He's a 70 at this point. So unlikely he's getting a call in the league, but you never know.
Jason, I want you to take a couple guesses as to who added this Wikipedia entry to Jim O'Brien's Wikipedia. It says, personal life. O'Brien's son, Jack O'Brien, is a noted internet comedian and podcast host.
Oh,
I would take a few guesses. Maybe. Is he?
We'll have to table that, you know. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, you know what? Hold on a minute. No, he's got like 45,000 followers. So, okay, maybe.
All right, fair enough.
He's the co-founder of crack.com. All right, I'm sorry to Jack O'Brien. Maybe he is.
Fair enough.
Please pay us. Hey, Jack, we'd love to be on whatever you're on. Please pay us money.
Yeah,
so.
Sounds right. Yeah, wonderful. We love it. So, yes, so 300 games lost. Exactly. There is someone who's lost exactly. Larry Costello, coach of the early 70s Milwaukee Bucks, of course, you know, won the 71 championship, mm-hmm. of course, was a great player for the 76ers. And then ended up leaving the Bucks in the post-Cream era, then had coached one season with the, or even like a half season with the Bulls. And like, hey, I'm just going to give up NBA coaching and then coach at Niagara University for a long time. So kind of interesting story for Larry Costello.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because you always would think that, like, after that Bucks run, that he would have, like, jobs for life. And, you know, the Bulls year didn't go great. And then he just was like, screw this. I'm done. Like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was him or them or who decided it was over. But, yeah, it's kind of cool that he just kind of walked away and was like, I'm good. I did what I needed to do, and I'm going to go coach at Niagara. So that's good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, he also coached at I forgot about this. He coached the Milwaukee Does for the women's basketball WBL in there. Yes, and yeah, I'm sorry. He played at Niagara, but he actually coached at Utica College. It was during the when they were making the transition from Division III to Division I. So, yes. So yeah, it's sort of an interesting kind of thing. He passed away at age 70 in 2001, but yeah, it seems given the early success that he had, you would have expected that he would have had would have had more longevity as a coach, but probably just decided like, hey, I'm just gonna I'm gonna live my life and do other things and coach in college and in Division III and everything will be all right.
Yeah good for him.
Yeah, all right, we got one more thing.
We do. Last one is a game in which exactly 300 points were scored, and we just passed the anniversary of this as well. This happened on March 15th, 1992. It happened one time. The Boston Celtics scored 152 points. The Portland Trailblazers scored 148. It was in double overtime. And we have done an episode talking about this game because discussed previously, this was Larry Bird's 49-point triple-double near the end of his career. We did an episode on the last great games for great players, and Larry Bird, we talked about this game at that time, too. I mean, a 49-point triple-double in 1992, Larry Bird. That's a hell of a game for him.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, this is a hell of a late-season game as well. I mean, Portland is 46-19. They're awesome. They're on their way to the NBA Finals, obviously. Boston is 36-29. They're still solid. You know, this is going to be the end of the road for Bird and the end of the road for kind of the Celtics. But, yeah, Bird is still solid. Drexler leads the Blazers with 41 points and 11 assists. Jerome Kersey adds 23 points and 14 rebounds. Terry Porter has 29 points. And Jason, your favorite player, coach, human being, Danny Ainge, with a hot 19 off the bench. So,
And he's the Blazers at this point, right?
Yes.
Now the Celtics, obviously.
Yes. Yeah. He has turned to the dark side of Portland. But again, last great game of Bird's career. I mean, we did a show about it. We talked about it. I mean, this is it. Like, I think this was this the inspiration for us doing that entire show?
It was, as a matter of fact, yeah.
Because we were like, whoa, this is like pretty late in Bird's. I mean, this is when Bird's like, hell, I can't stand. I can't sit.
Right.
My back's shot. But then, boom, here he goes.
Yeah. And he had a few, he trickled off a few solid games after that. But yeah, this was like the 12th to last game of his career. And yeah, obviously the last, you know, really, really great game when, you know, almost 50 point triple double, especially, you know, it was, a very rare occurrence in NBA history with Westbrook and Harden. It's been a little bit less rare, but still, you know, only a very small number of players have done that. He extremely close, but yeah, definitely a classic game, really exciting, fun game to watch. We talked with Ben Taylor about this one when we had him on the show. It was definitely fun times there. So yeah, I was stunned that there had never been another game in NBA history where two teams combined for 300 points. Like, that seemed impossible, but I checked every possible combination, you know, up to a point margin that would have ever happened in NBA history. And yeah, it only time that's ever happened where two teams combined for 300 points. So
yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it seems like something that, I mean, I guess it's not, but I mean, with as many games as have been played, like, it's right. It's doesn't seem like,
well, yeah, like you know, 151, 149, 153, 147.
Yeah, like, especially like over the last few years when like games are getting really high scored, or a game goes to overtime or something like that. Yeah, it's just kind of shocking.
It's a high number, so you would think it'd be rare, but yeah, just only one time in NBA history.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah, for sure. Like, not something that's happening all the time, but like, yeah, a couple times. Yeah. I mean, the league's been around. We've had a lot of games been played, but one time, and it's a really cool game that it happens too. It's a really significant game that happens, which makes it pretty cool. Boston, we should say, Kevin McHale, 22 points off the bench. Reggie Lewis, he shot poorly, 9 of 21, but still had 23 points. And then Robert Parrish with a 22-10 game as well. D. Brown adds 4 points and 11 assists. So.
Nice. Yeah. All right. And D. Brown is my T-shirt right now is D. Brown covering his eyes and honoring the no-look dunk in the 91 dunk contest, which the day before St. Patrick's Day, I would have to say is the number one highlight in Irish cultural history.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great shirt. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's an awesome shirt. Good on you.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So now that I have insulted the Irish, I think we can go ahead and close the show.
They're fine. They'll get over it.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out for 300 episodes. Hopefully you've enjoyed the ride as much as we have. You can, of course, find us wherever podcasts are played. And you can also find us on social media at Facebook and on Twitter. Both of them are at Over and Back NBA. And Rich, I just want to thank you for being a wonderful partner for all these 300 episodes, and looking forward to many more together.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, no, it's been an incredible journey. I'm glad you reached out to me that one day, and I don't know why, I forget exactly how it started, but I think you were just like, hey, we like wrestling. And I was like, yeah. And you're like, but we like basketball too. And I was like, yeah. You're like, why don't we do a basketball history show? And I was like, all right, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah.
And yeah, I never would have thought we would do 300 episodes. I mean, we've been doing this show. I've lived in multiple places. You lived in multiple places. We've gotten married. It's just so many different things have happened in the time period of this. We've went through a pandemic. We're still in a pandemic. Things have gone, you know, up and down and left and right. And the league's changed a lot. But, you know, NBA history hasn't changed much, and NBA continues to make history. So there's always something for us to talk about and touch on. But it's been awesome, and I hope everybody has enjoyed this. Even if you listen, if you just listened to the last episode and that's your first episode, if you've been with us from day one, I mean, we really do appreciate you guys as well for sticking with us and listening to us and supporting us all the way.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.